this is Paul. I wanted to say a few things about the responses to my video, The Meaning Crisis and the Liberationist Social Justice Nihilism Loop. I made that video on Monday night, and I released it Tuesday morning. Yesterday, I was gone at our classes meeting. It's about an hour and 15-minute drive, so I left about 7:30. And then I didn't get home till after 6 and spent that time with my family, eating dinner, doing chores, so on and so forth. And so this morning sort of found, I was surprised how popular the video went, and I was surprised how much reaction it got. I don't always know when a video is going to get a strong response or be received in a certain way. I do have a number of thoughts about it. One of the surprises that I read in the comments is how many people thought I was sort of beating up on a woman. And that was very interesting, because I wonder if a man had given the same speech, if people would have reacted in the same way. And whereas on one hand, there's always this response, often from some women, that men shouldn't talk that way to women, but or about women, and I didn't think I was talking about her at all. I very much tried to keep it to the positions and the ideas that she was presenting. That's what I wanted to critique. I'm sure she's an absolutely lovely woman. She seemed to be an absolutely lovely woman. But it's almost the case where, men and women should be standing on the same platform, but what women say or do shouldn't be critiqued by men or in the same way. There's sort of infantilization implicit in that women can be afforded the opportunity and the platforms to share their work, but their work ought not to be critiqued by men. Or their women seem perfectly open and willing to critique one another, and it's often taken differently. So that's an interesting dynamic. So I wondered to what degree, because she was a young woman, was there such, I think implicitly, especially sometimes on the part of men, there's this very deep response to defend a woman, which I think is a good thing. But I wonder to what degree that got triggered in this response. Then there was a sense of sort of piling on her, negative comments about her, or applauding comments about the video. I was really quite surprised by the response to the video. Part of, obviously, what I've been thinking about is sort of these three causes that are moving through our culture. And people sort of across the board don't like my names for the three causes, and I continue to sort of work them through. Very much liberationist is the primary moral implicit mode in our culture. And I think in many ways this was sort of set up by abolitionism. The progressive era at the end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century, it's helpful to remember that prohibition was seen as a move to help women and children, because men would stop paying, wasting so much money on alcohol, and men wouldn't be violent at home. So if you could take alcohol out of the equation, then men would be better fathers. That whole progressive movement that went through the United States in the late 19th, beginning of 20th century, the women's suffrage movement, there's a super interesting podcast with Nancy Piercy, with Peter Lighthart and James Wood about her recent book. And so I'm really probably going to pick up that book and check that out, especially thinking about the German Breakwater Conference that's coming. But I want to make a bigger video at some point, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the relationship. I did this on Voices, the relationship between sort of the liberationist, I called it liberationist social justice and conservative social justice. Now, there's something for both parties to sort of complain about in there. Conservative probably isn't the best word, maybe a disciplinist versus liberationist. Both liberationism and disciplinism are very biblical Christian themes. You can't listen to Jesus' sermon in Nazareth, where Jesus is quoting Isaiah 61. I'm come to announce good news to the poor, freedom for the captive, sight for the blind. Those are deeply liberationist themes, and those themes are very much in the truth will set you free. They're very much in the Bible. They're very much in Jesus. But that Bible also has this disciplinist theme where we are constantly warned to mortify ourselves, to stand against the evil impulses or the desires of our heart, our avaricious nature. The Bible and Christianity have both of those themes. On CRC Voices, a conversation broke out with respect to the story in the Gospel of John of the woman who was caught in adultery. And this is often sort of championed by liberationists, because here Jesus is basically talking a crowd out of stoning a woman. Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. And right there, you sort of have the balance. I'm not condemning you. Go and sin no more. Some people complain that go and sin no more gets forgotten. I mentioned in the Voices post that for all of the, there haven't been a lot, but for all of the times that I've been in a church disciplinary meeting where a minister is being deposed because this minister had an affair and cheated on his wife, never has anyone stood up at a classis meeting and declared that, you know, we should not condemn the man because the woman is not present, who is equally guilty of adultery as is the man, and go and sin no more in your church. That's usually not how it works. And so, but this liberationist impulse has, or this liberationist spirit has for so many people, it's implicit in movies, it's implicit in shows, it's become the dominant salvation narrative in our culture. And it's, of course, deeply set there from Rousseau, that people are good and society is evil, and big mean society is repressing people. But it's helpful to remember that liberationists themselves become disciplinists, because they will often turn around and chide other groups for their lack of discipline, men who are not being restrained with their tongues or their eyes or their thoughts or their behaviors towards women. Again, it was Louise Perry who noted that in some of the feminist works that she was doing, you'd have these women who were basically lecturing young men and boys with feminist ideology in order to get them to behave in really rather Puritan fashion with respect to women. So the liberationism and the disciplinism don't really live in separate universes. They really both sort of work together. And again, they're both products of Christianity. Sky Jatani did a Holy Post post today on Christian nationalism. And so you've got this one duality between, let's say, liberationism and disciplinism that's going on through the culture war. And you've got this other polarity between, let's say, the secular, which is this world, and eternity, the now and the always. And what's interesting about Sky Jatani's piece there is that he basically makes the critique that Christian nationalists are doing the wrong thing because they're leveraging Jesus in order to win political points, which I think that's probably a fair critique, but they should love Jesus for his own sake. Okay, but at the same time, the liberationists have plenty of their own points that they'd like to make, and they would like Jesus to support their points as well. There's been a long critique of certain forms of evangelicalism that they were so heavenly minded, they were worthless on earth. And what you find is that not only do both groups sort of move back and forth between the liberationist and the disciplinist, both groups move back and forth between the now and the always, the secular and the eternal. And so, yeah, it's particularly difficult when human beings, we sort of tend to like to work on sort of the hinge between two poles and like pick a side. Now, when you add two other dimensions, let's say if you put it in quadrants, let's say, suddenly the math gets a lot more difficult because, let's say, you're a liberationist in the secular frame, but you're kind of a disciplinist in the eternal frame, or you're a disciplinist in the secular frame and a liberationist in an eternal frame. And so, in fact, many evangelicals and conservative people tend to be disciplinists in the secular frame. They want to strive on with discipline in order to achieve the goal in the eternal. And part of what happens, as I noted in the video, is that if the eternal frame is sort of removed and all you have is the secular frame, I've made this point before, the religious dimensions get intensified. Because if there is no possibility of eternal judgment for Hitler and Stalin and Mao and suicidal dictators or whoever your political rivals or enemies are, then suddenly all victories must be won here and now. This is the interesting way that the secular and the eternal are in a joint economy. And part of what happens is that, let's say, your liberationist strategies, at least with your liberationist postures, at least towards certain groups, mean that you take sort of a disciplinist posture against other groups. And again, in that way, sort of the liberationist and the disciplinist work together in a joint economy, just as the secular and the eternal work together in a joint economy. And the way these things work together mean that if you're sort of working in one quadrant, it will affect the other quadrants in terms of who your friends are, who your neighbors are, who your political allies are, what issues you care most about. And you can see this in many different respects. If you want to look at, say, abortion and gun control. It's the disciplinists want sort of federal action on abortion, or at least permission for state action on abortion, but because they're claiming, well, you have loss of life for the most vulnerable. Now the arguments about gun control are interestingly parallel, because the anxiety over gun control is that if there are too many guns in the culture, then you have loss of life for the vulnerable. And, well, one group is for, let's say, looser restrictions, liberation with respect to laws, with respect to abortion, but they want discipline with respect to laws of gun ownership. And you can see how, and then obviously you're going to have, say, secular anxieties, things in this life, and different feelings with respect to the eternal, or the everlasting, or the afterlife. So, again, very, very interested in the response to that video on liberationism. And, you know, I want to keep working sort of these main ideas, because I think they're sort of a helpful framework to understand a little bit about what's going on in the culture war. Hopefully, if we can understand a little bit better what's going on in the culture war in terms of these values and the way that they play out in terms of particular positions that people take, maybe we can have better conversations about them. So, I just wanted to share a few thoughts. Let me know what you think in the comments section.